Welcome to another episode of Disrupt. I'm Robert Holly with Home Healthcare News. Before we jump into my conversation with Amedisys CEO Paul Kusserow, I want to give a shout out to our podcast sponsor, Homecare Homebase, whose powerful cloud-based home health software streamlines virtually every aspect of your business. Spend less time on paperwork and more time delivering quality care to the patients who need you. Visit hchb.com to learn more. Since joining Amedisys in 2014, CEO Paul Kusserow has spearheaded an ambitious turnaround effort, during which time the company's stock has climbed from around $20 per share to the more than $130 per share range it sits at today. Most of the home health provider's growth over the years has come organically, though the Baton Rouge, Louisiana-based company has been active on the M&A front of late, reflected by its two recent hospice deals. Like all home health providers, preparing for PDGM is a main focus for Amedisys moving into 2020. I recently caught up with Paul to talk about PDGM, his plans for Amedisys in the year ahead, and the future of healthcare. During our conversation, held in late March, Paul also discussed a new innovations role that the company had recently filled. On the line now is Amedisys CEO and President Paul Kusserow. Welcome to Disrupt.
Hi, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing well today. It's, you know, spring in Chicago, so it's still chilly, but doing well. How are you?
Very well. Well, you know, it's spring in Nashville, so all the trees are out and it's pretty and the daffodils are blooming, so we're feeling good about things.
As always, on Disrupt, we have a lot to cover during this conversation. We're going to talk about Amedisys 2018, its plans for the year ahead, PDGM, sure. Of course, you know, building a bigger hospice presence, some of your M&A activity, maybe even talk about some of the risk-sharing pilots that you're involved in. Before we get to all that, let's start by talking about 2018. You reported on your Q4 and year-end results, of course, toward the end of February. Looking back, how do you feel about the year on a whole?
We feel really good. I mean, I think we, as I said on our call, we feel like we hit on all cylinders for really the first time, and which was very gratifying. I mean, I think we got a straight A report card, so I feel very good for that. We, you know, we did over 10 million visits. We pushed our star scores up to 4.4. We did the compassionate care hospice deal, which really catapulted us into a major hospice player. So we're excited about that. We'll be the third largest in the country. We made investments in Medalogics, which are really helping our analytics capabilities. So we feel really, really good about that. And, you know, financially, since we focus on our, you know, we basically just focus on three things for our company. We focus on, and our strategy is real simple. We focus on producing great patient care. We focus on being the employer of choice, so taking really good care of our employees. And then we focus on making sure our employees have the best tools to do the best job to deliver the best care. And when all that happens, we do really well, and we've grown very well. So just for example, you know, we grew our EBITDA almost $40 million, which is quite extraordinary, from 142 to 181. Then we expanded our EBITDA margin to just under 11%. So from a financial performance, that turned out really well. We don't really focus hugely on the financial aspects. We focus more on taking great care of patients and taking great care of our employees. But in turn, it seems like the financial results always follow very nicely. So we feel really good about it. And, you know, as I keep saying with our company, you know, we're only people. We don't own any real assets. Home care and hospice and personal care is all about people doing the right thing with patients. And we're now over 21,000, so we've grown considerably, and it's all due to the 21,000 folks doing the best they can every day for our patients. So it was a great year. We feel really good about it.
There are a lot of highlights there that you just mentioned: compassionate care, hospice, Medalogics. Is there something that stood out to you personally as kind of the crowning achievement of your 2018? Or just, you know, one particular move that you're, as an individual, very excited about?
Yeah, I'd say the crowning achievement always is quality and then turnover. I'd say quality and turnover, which we grew quality to, you know, best in the industry standards. And then we also took turnover down to best in the industry standards. Feel really good about that. And, you know, the other thing I feel really good about is 18 was basically done with no acquisitions. So we've done all this growth we've had. I mean, when I started, again, I don't really follow stock price, certainly not on a daily basis. But, you know, we were in the low 20s And you know, we're up in the 120s now.
Yeah, I was about to say, we do try to keep track of our company stock prices, and Amedisys is definitely not in the 20s anymore.
Yeah, and that feels good. It allows us to do more things. It allows us to have more capital to do things. It allows us, you know, to make acquisitions. So, and we did this again all organically. So, how many, you know, we basically took the stock price up 5 times. And in some cases, when it's running high, up to 6 times, you know, we've done all this just on our own. And again, we have no real assets. It's just our people. So it's been the will of our people and the desire of our people to take really good care of patients and work together to do so. And so that's what I'm most proud of. This was nothing more than, you know, at this point, 21,000 people getting together and deciding that great patient care was something we needed to do. And then, you know, I'm also very thankful for our investors who've been staying with us and decided to put their money in our company. So it's worked out very, very well. We're really lucky.
So I think this fits in to that overall momentum. And I want to touch on it at the top before we jump into PDGM and some of the other points of this conversation. It's not often we get to break news on Disrupt, but I think we get to today, which we're connecting right now, March 26th, just for a quick time reference for everybody out there. But yeah, Paul, you have some news for us, don't you?
Yeah, we've hired a chief innovations officer, SVP of innovations. She's the newest member of our team. Her name is Sandra Schrauf. She's comes from the advisory board, most recently Optum, but has had most of her career at the advisory board. She was a McKinsey person like myself, so we're both alumni of McKinsey. So a management consultant, then did some very impressive things at the advisory board where I also worked. And so we're able to bring her on board. And she's fantastic. And so we're excited. We believe that, and again, here's the opportunities that you have when you have a growing company, when you have really good financials, you can start to put efforts into innovation. And so she's just started last week and she's doing a fantastic job, but we're going to be teeing up and putting money into certain things in innovation. So we're going to be looking at a variety of things that we've been talking about, including, you know, hospital at home, including, you know, more palliative care, including using new technologies like Amedilogix to drive care coordination tools, discharge planning tools. All of these we're going to be looking at. We'll pick a couple and we'll start to work toward those. Initially, though, in our plan is to hopefully strengthen our case with managed care. We believe that there's some big markets there currently now. It's not, as we've talked about, it's not very attractive. But we believe we have to do some more things to start to take risk. So that's a lot of that's going to be involved in analytical analysis and care planning and a lot of those tools. So she comes from a technology background. So we're going to be looking very heavily into that area. So we're very excited to bring Sandra on board.
Well, thanks for tipping us off to the news. I'm sure we'll cover it on homehealthcarenews.com today.
Sure you will.
Shifting gears a little bit. So 2018 was a good year for your company. Lots of exciting stuff going on. But like all home healthcare providers, there's a lot of change coming in 2019. I'm thinking, of course, specifically of preparing for the patient-driven groupings model, PDGM. Whether it's ramped up billing demands, changes to therapy reimbursements, in what ways will Amedisys be affected in your view?
I mean, the interesting thing about PDGM, which I find it's both a good thing and a bad thing, is it's still emerging. I don't believe PDGM has settled yet. And this is one man's opinion, so you're getting it. But I think PDGM will occur for sure. But I'm not sure that the behavioral adjustment elements, which are fairly draconian, will be full. We'll have to wait till the final rule comes out. But I'm really not sure that they're going to do major payment reform and then add on a 6.4% cut on that, fundamentally based on behavioral assumptions. What we've done is we've worked with the rest of the industry, but have been very active in making sure that, you know, behavioral assumptions become behavioral adjustments. Hopefully they're done in a more spread out manner. So obviously we're working with the Senate. We've dropped a bill there. We're working with the House. We expect the bill to be dropped in the House in the next couple of weeks. So we hopefully that'll be done. We've been at CMS. I've been at CMS quite a lot and have had some very good conversations with the administrator and some of the other folks about what the impact of this potentially could be on the industry. And so I think they're starting to listen. We're having more dialogue with them. We'll be seeing them again in April. So we're hopeful that this will mitigate somewhat. That being said, it is major reform. So we're prepping for it very intently. We've been, ever since it was announced, we basically have been heads down working on it. And we believe we're very prepared for it, or will be very, very prepared for it. We believe that there's some elements there that can be done through utilization management. And we believe that there's some elements that can be done in terms of, you know, utilizing different staff. So we're pretty optimistic about what our ability to handle it when it comes. What I'm frankly worried about is the rest of the industry. And, you know, I can say that from a pure perspective, I can say, oh, the rest, you know, I think there will be some people that don't know what's coming. I think that's going to be a problem. But at the same time, I look at my balance sheet and I have plenty of money. And I think, wow, those people that don't know what's coming, once we figure out what the effects of PDGM will be, they'll be potentially good places to go and acquire. So either way, we're thinking that this is going to be an opportunity for us, to be honest with you.
And just a quick note, I think that House bill is going to be led by Representative Sewell. I think she's a Democratic congresswoman out of Alabama, if I recall correctly.
She's been great. She's one of the leaders. We've also been very fortunate to leverage our legislators in Louisiana. We've got a lot of leadership there from Congressman Graves, as well as Senator Cassidy and Senator Kennedy.
And I know Senator Susan Collins is often cited as a home care, home health champion as well.
Yeah, she's been great. It's good to have somebody from Maine. Maine and Louisiana, we stretch the length of the country, the length of the country.
Getting back to PDGM, I know one of the specific provisions or points is the changes to therapy thresholds, basing therapy, you know, on patients and their conditions rather than volume, I think is the general idea. Is that going to change how Amedisys provides therapy services at all?
Yeah, I think for anybody to say it won't is, that's not, you know, I think that's disingenuous. I think the point is that we believe is therapy is essential to a lot of home health. And so, but the question is how do we fit it in and how do we add it to our care plans? And I think what you're going to see is probably with the more disciplined folks that are out there, a lot of rigor around making sure we do care planning and documentation right, and then making sure we have the right caregivers delivering the right care at the right time. So I think there will be, I mean, I think what's going to, the people that'll play this game very well will be those people who are very planful and very deliberate with the type of staff, optimizing the staff with the fundamental work they have to do on the patient. So focusing on the disease. But yeah, I mean, I think one of the key things that clearly we got when we went visiting with CMS is they believe there's been overutilization of therapy. We don't necessarily agree. We believe that therapy does need to be included. The question is, and we're working through that right now, you know, hypothetically, how much therapy would be used in some of our current cases.
This question might be a little bit off topic. I wanted to ask, because you do have your experience coming from Humana as well. Yeah. Sometimes we get into conversations with people who might not be directly affected by PDGM. Maybe they don't get a huge chunk of their revenue stream from Medicare, but PDGM/Medicare home health, the Medicare home health benefit, that's going to have an impact on other rates outside of Medicare, right? I mean, this is something everybody should kind of stay in tune with, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think the key thing that we have to think about as an industry is, does PDGM really deliver, is it the same benefit? And I think what we're seeing is it's a struggle. It probably isn't the same benefit. It's probably a little less. And I think that's some of the things that I think are going to be very impactful. So if something doesn't fit in, to the PDGM cohort of diseases and DRGs and everything that we deal with, if that doesn't fit in, it's going to have to go elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And I think the key there is that means it's because home health is the most effective and least expensive delivery of care, that probably means it's going to go to a more expensive place. So I think what you're going to see with managed care, what CMS is going to see, is some of those things that potentially, if they are not included, and that's why I still think this is a moving target, because I think they should be included. But some of the things that we're talking about could have to happen in a hospital, or we might have to take those people after they do go to a hospital and present themselves and can get under a code that is actually usable for home health. So that's one of the things about PDGM that I think as people are going through it, they're trying to determine, it will there be care that they're currently delivering now that they won't be able to deliver later? And then I think the other element of this is the whole idea of institutional care having a greater reimbursement for institutional care versus community care. I mean, community care is a good way to take care of people and prevent them from going into hospitals.
Right. It's how you stay ahead of the curve.
Right. Stay ahead of the curve. But it's also the way people are sick now. I mean, people are chronically ill. A lot of times you can use home health to avoid the hospital. And what here CMS is doing is it's incentivizing people to and places like us to go to the hospital to get our home health. I think this is largely a MedPAC sort of driven area. They seem to believe that home health should be pigeonholed into something that comes into pure post-acute coming out of hospitals. I see home health, and I think the rest of the industry does, and I don't think CMS is there yet. But I see home health as something that can really do a good job of keeping people in the community out of institutions. And CMS, by doing PDGM, has fundamentally put us right back into taking care of people coming out of hospitals. And I think that limits us. So that's an area we're also pushing back against very hard. There shouldn't be a bias. If somebody's home health ready and they fit the criteria for home health, regardless of coming out of an institution or a community, we should be able to take care of them without any bias, particularly payment bias.
Let's circle back to Compassionate Care Hospice. With sure. that deal completed, Amedisys becomes, as you said, the third largest hospice provider in the nation. Why are you so bullish on hospice?
Well, you know, one of the things that you have to consider as you're a company is, you know, what do you have in your portfolio? And, you know, fundamentally, we have two businesses, and we have home health hospice, and we're, you know, have a small but growing personal care business. And right now, considering some of the ambiguity that exists in home health, you know, we're doubling down on hospice. Couple reasons. So we really, when I first showed up here about 4 years ago, we had a very small hospice business. Basically on our own, and thanks to our hospice people, we doubled that business on its own. No acquisitions, no nothing. We just doubled the business. We became very good at it. And really, I think if you look at our metrics, quite extraordinary operators of hospice. So in 4 years, we really built out a best of breed capacity. So when I look at this and I look at some of the headwinds we have in home health, you know, PDGM, we still have to figure out what that effect's going to be. And we've been generating a huge amount of cash, largely because we've been running the business. We paid off all our debt. And we said, okay, where do we want to go? And we said, well, the regulatory environment in hospice has been very good. The reimbursement environment has been very good. The economics of hospice are very good. And we do it really, really well. We said, let's put our money into hospice. We're going to continue to do so. We followed it on with another acquisition that we announced that's due to close in April out in Tulsa and Rose Rock, which is a nice little tuck-in. We've been doing de novos. We'll do 7 de novos this year. So we're starting up hospices where we have really strong need for hospice, particularly where it overlaps with our home health. We'll be doing more de novos. We figured out how to do that well. So it's a very good balance with home health. Plus, we believe they belong together. You know, when we first started out, we didn't do any sort of cross referrals once somebody we were taking care of in home health was hospice appropriate. We didn't really pass them along very well. Now we do. So where there's overlap, about 70% of our patients go from home health to hospice. And also the other thing is it allows us to expand into palliative care. And we've been expanding slowly. Reimbursement's very hard in palliative care, but we've been growing it and we're going to continue to grow palliative care. We believe that's a necessary offering to have in certain markets. So we're excited by it. We like it.
And we first connected right after the Compassion Care Hospice, I think, was announced.
Yeah.
I should say, rather, we didn't first connect, but we connected right after that. During that conversation, you explained how that was a product of your in-house deal sourcing function, as opposed, you know, through going through external means. Can you tell me a little bit about that and the value that that brings to Medicis?
So I came out of Humana, as we talked about, and I was the deal guy at Humana. We did, I think, close to 40 deals and spent, you know, billions of dollars, and that was fun.
That does seem fun.
That was a lot of fun, yeah. So when I came here, my job was to clean up the company and get the cash flow going and then go out and look for some acquisitions. So that's why I'm so excited about 18. We're hitting on all businesses. We're doing very, very well in all businesses. So that means once you're doing well, once you can play that, I'm taking care of my own business very, very well, you can then expand. You can then add things. And hospice has been performing so well for those 4 years that it was time to, and with a very clear regulatory environment, it was time to move in there. The problem was, and we got to the table on several of these big deals that have been out there, the prices were undoable. You can't, they made no economic sense. They still don't make economic sense. So some of those large plays that were out there were trading at multiples that you can't make it work. And we have to be good financial stewards. So we, after, you know, trying and losing on several deals with what we believe was aggressive, but the right prices, we said, this isn't working. So we have to change the way we're approaching it. So basically what we did is we started a proprietary, let's get there out there proactively before there's any process, to people that we really want to engage with. And that's what we did with Compassionate Care. We went out very specifically. I met with the owner, Milt, and we had a very nice meeting. And then it took a year to get the deal done. But what we did is we really went and sat down, understood what his needs were, and were able to come up with a very good price and also make it work for him and his employees. So this is still occurring. We have a very nice pipeline, and we're still working very hard to continue to bring elements in. And then we also built up our own startup function. So the de novos are going very well. Economically, they work out very well. So we don't like auctions. Private equity is forcing things to pay way too much. Outside people that want to come in and own home health and hospice and personal care are overpaying. So for us, set up a proprietary, go search and find, go cultivate. We use very specific small bankers as well to aid us. They're on contract with us. We pay them on the deal, but we also pay them monthly stipends. So we believe we've developed a good technique because we're doing so well financially, we have to start to spend money. And the best thing you can do is spend money on growth. And that is when you're generating the amount of cash that we're generating now, you know, knock on wood, hopefully it'll continue this way. You know, you have to go out and buy things. And that's what we've been doing. But you also have to be responsible and get good prices. Thus far, we've been able to get very, very good prices. And so our deal team should be really proud of it. And I know they are. And also, we stay outside the banking process, so we don't pay banking fees, and that saves us money, too. So we're able to, you know, give bonuses to our people and use that, which is what we've been doing this year with some of the money we saved.
If you're just jumping into this Disrupt episode, a quick reminder that this is Bob Holly with Home Healthcare News, and we're talking to Amedisys President and CEO Paul Kusserow. Paul, we've touched on this already, but Amedisys has really undergone a pretty significant turnaround compared to years ago, and that's in nearly every facet of the business, including staffing and retention, which we all know is very important. Can you talk a little bit more about what you're seeing in terms of turnover and what you're doing to keep high-quality employees on board? Just for some context here, I mean, a lot of people see staffing still as the number one challenge, even more so than PDGM.
Yeah, I think, as we talked about initially, the real thing about our company and the real important thing is, again, as I've worked at a lot of other companies in healthcare and outside of healthcare and have done management consulting. So I've seen a lot of different company structures. And what's so unique about this business is it's just people. And so what drives value when you have really no assets? So some intellectual property, but it's basically your people going out and doing the best they can every day. How do you think about that? So what we've basically done is we study our people endlessly. So we spend a lot of time surveying them. We have a full-time researcher on here that looks at, you know, how are RNs feeling about us? How are LPNs feeling about us? What attracts them to us? What's turning people off? When people leave us, we talk to them. We say, why did you leave? What will make it more attractive for you to build a career here? All these things. And we take this feedback and we build it into our company. And so, and then we're constantly learning and constantly iterating on it. And the interesting thing is we're a company of caregivers. You know, I view myself as the caregiver of the caregivers. You know, I don't provide direct care to our patients, but I take care of all the people who do. And I believe that it's very important for us to constantly take care of our people the way they're taking care of our patients. And what that attitude, I think, has done, and everybody has this attitude, it's pervasive here. What that has done is it's really provided a place where we take care of each other, and then we take care, and in order to take care of our patients the best we can. And that's kind of how things work here. So it's been an interesting change, I think, in philosophy, but that's really driven turnover way down. People who know, when we have the star scores we do, people who know that we're out to take great care, we attract the best people. So if you have strong stars, good people want to come work for you because they want to go to a place where they know they can take great care of patients and where that's very important to that company. So that's what we do. That's how we think of ourselves. Our job is to find the best people, to give them the best tools so that they can take the best care of the patients. And then everything good follows from that.
Only have a couple more points I want to bring up. I want to touch on your risk-sharing pilots and the investment into Medalogix. Do you have another 10 minutes or so to hang out with us?
Of course, as much time as you like. I'm having fun.
All right. During your past few quarterly earnings calls, you've highlighted how Amedisys is engaged in a handful of risk-sharing pilots. I think three is what you've been saying. Can you share some color on those, though? I know they're pretty early in the process.
Yeah, sure. No, we have 15 pilots now in 13 states.
15 is definitely more than three.
Yes, there are 15 pilots in 13 states, but there are four different nuances in the pilots. So you're right. So there's basically four pilots that are occurring. It's just we're trying them out in all these different states. And they're very basic pilots, but starting to take some risk. But it's gain share risk. So the idea is we go and work, and we're working with three plans on this, one in Oregon, one national plan, and one in Massachusetts. And we're basically taking risk on quality scores, making sure we maintain highest quality scores with their patients, on ACH rates, so readmission to hospitals. We're taking risk on making sure that we drive readmission rates down. That's very, very important to the economics of payers. And in a couple of instances, we're trying to influence medication adherence. So are people taking their meds? Because once people take their meds properly on a regular basis and they have the right meds at the right time, we see ACH rates go way down. So we're playing in all of those areas. we're continuing, and the results thus far are good. But it's not full risk. It's gain share risk. So we're paid a base rate, and then we have the ability to gain more and to share parts of those gains with the managed care plans. So we're excited by that. Again, we believe this is really crucial to us as a company and our strategy. As you may know, 38% of the country now that does have Medicare, it goes through Medicare Advantage plans. So 38% penetration of Medicare Advantage. It's growing much faster than fee-for-service. So that's becoming increasingly a bigger piece of the pie. And what's important for us is, and as you know, also the rates are much less. They've been able to negotiate the rates down in home health, significantly down. There's a significant difference between $35 and $40 per visit. So what we want to do is we've been going back to these plans and saying, what can we do so that at some point, and we are not getting there yet with these pilots, but we believe we will as we keep adding value, at what point can we get equal to or above fee-for-service rates? Mm-hmm. Now, we believe, and the way you do that is taking risk. Now, what we believe is there's very few people who are going to be able to do that. So having 38 or 40% of a market with maybe one or two players who can actually take that risk and get reimbursed at a good rate, we believe it's open field running. So we believe that there's some really significant opportunities there. The plans are evolving in terms of how they think of home health. And again, it's what consumers want, particularly baby boomers. They want to basically age in place. They do not want to be in an institution. They want to stay at home. And what we do is we fight to keep people in the home. And that's what we do. So it's a good correlation, but it's still evolving, particularly the sophistication level of our ability to take risk, as well as the understanding of what we can do in managed care. So I think in the next couple of years, you'll see a lot more of it. And I think you'll see a lot more interest from managed care in the home.
Paul, I'm getting the rap sign from my producer. I still want to touch on Medalogix very briefly in just a minute or two. Could you talk about that investment and the upside you see in that predictive analytics firm?
Sure. Well, Medalogix is a wonderful analytics tool that was initially used, developed a methodology to predict when people should go from home health to hospice. What they've also built out, though, is very nice tools to look at when somebody will likely be readmitted. We're using that tool in about 43 of our care centers. We're testing it out because every morning we get our people in those care centers get a readout about what the risk level of readmission is. We also know that after they're discharged from us, Medalogix has developed another tool, which we find very good, where people, if they're increasing the likelihood of having to go back into home health, that we know about them and that therefore we can bring them back into home health. So we're very excited about how they evolve here. We've also been working with them since we built large data sets ourselves. Before we made this, we've also been working with them on protocols that will help us with care planning for PDGM. So it's been a wonderful investment. We're continuing to look at expanding tools with Medalogix. We're also looking at other companies where we can do some care planning, where we can do some care assessments, so that we'll be able to produce really strong results.
That's Paul Kusserow, President and CEO of Amedisys. Paul, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us on this episode of Disrupt.
Thanks, Bob. Really appreciate it. Thanks for talking.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Disrupt. For more news and insights on the home health, home care, and hospice industries, subscribe to our daily or weekly newsletters at homehealthcarenews.com. I'm Robert Holly, and this has been a production of Aging Media Network, Chicago, Illinois.